Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. Your Peugeot car or van might benefit from a free software upgrade. For more information and to find out if this applies to your vehicle, call the lads in Slattery's Garage, puck on 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.
Thanks, Pat, and welcome back to the second hour of Tip Today. Councillor David Dunn was on to us. Davey, as you know, is a Sinn Féin councillor in Carrick. He says, on the personal level, I want to wish Simon Coveney well, a good politician and a safe pair of hands. But why should 12 or 13 people that are leaving politics get to pick the next leader of the country? We need a general election now and let the people decide who should lead the country, says Davey. 0833 11 3311.
The Tipperary Village Tour, funded by Commission Na Mban with the television licence fee. Tipperary's
Tip FM. Morning, Ellie. Whereabouts are you?
Good morning, Fran. We're in Littleton this morning here at Moycarkey Burris Grounds. Everyone say hello to Fran.
Hello, Littleton.
We have a fantastic crowd here today and a lot of brilliant stories to bring you over the next hour as part of our village tour. And John G, of course, with me again. John G, Littleton, we're in this week. Tell us why.
Why? Well, sure, I don't know why we're here. In fact, to be honest with you, I wasn't going to suggest bringing the village tour here at all. All I knew about Littleton was a place that you went through on the way to Dublin. You had to watch out, you might get caught for speed. And other than that, you kept going on up.
You're very wrong about that.
But anyhow, the thing is then, and you know what I did then? There about 6 weeks ago, I came down, I heard Jimmy Duggan was doing a tour, and I said, my God, I can't miss out on that. And I came down, what are you going to talk about in Littleton? And my God, he uncovered all kinds of riches that I didn't know anything about. For example, there's a ring fort right in the middle of the village, there's a tower house, and then of course we found out as well as that the old name for the place is Ballydavid. Isn't that right, Jimmy? Ballydavid. And he took us up to the site of Ballydavid House. And I thought it was a village that kind of grew up haphazardly. But in fact, it's a planned village like Durrow. And in fact, the man who did most of it was actually an Anglican clergyman. And very unusual for an Anglican clergyman. His name was O'Grady, isn't that right, Jimmy? So there was some fascinating stories. And then another thing I didn't realise. In 1920, right, an awful lot of the barracks in Tipperary were being attacked. But most of them were unsuccessful. Even the ones that they had big talk about, like cross barracks and that kind of thing. But the barracks here in Littleton was actually, there was no, I didn't even know it, they actually got in, captured it, burned it out and took all the arms and took the men capture. But of course they had one man here, I suppose, he's very well known, and that of course is Colonel Gerry Ryan, who was involved in the freedom movement, and then after that was involved in this, he took the pro-treaty side. And of course his great friend was Dick Mulcahy. And Dick Mulcahy was fought in 1916, fought in the War of Independence, was Collins' right-hand man, led the army, the pro-treaty army during the Civil War, was the leader of Fine Gael, and went on to become Minister for Education. And a fascinating story here is he's buried down the road here in Ballymoreen Cemetery. So there were so many stories came up. And then I began to think about other things, sport and the village, right? And I have an idea. You know, there's four presidents, most famous American presidents up on Mount Rushmore. Who would you put up if we had four sportsmen here in Tipperary? Who would you put on our one? And I'm going to try and pick him. I think everyone will disagree with this anyway, but I would pick Tommy Wade, show jumping, Rachel Blackmore, horse racing, John Doyle for his 8 All-Ireland medals, and our most famous soccer player, Shane Long. Now, before anybody rings in, he's not actually from here. He's from Gutnahoo, Glendool, but he crossed the border. He learned his soccer right here in that wonderful club, St. Kevin's. I think we're going to have somebody coming along because, you know, he was a Tipperary hurler and a minor hurler. How do you make the move from rural Ireland to playing in the Premier League, yeah, to playing with Southampton and Reading? So I think there's absolutely fascinating stories. And then, of course, as chairman of Tip Tourism, I have to come in and say something. I have a project I'm very excited about, which is the Derry na Flann, the Littleton Labyrinth. And I think that will be transformative for tourism. And I think we have Pat Lamb coming along here, and he will tell us all about about that. My God, we have the richest of stories. I let you go because I'll tell you, we're going to run out of time if I keep talking. The stories are too good.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to hear from the pipe band shortly now in just a moment. But as well as that, over the next hour, a lot of the local groups we'll be speaking to will be learning more about the history. But first, let me introduce you to the Sean Tracy Pipe Band. Fantastic. Well done. Jerry, excellent. Well done. Tell us about Sean Tracy Pipe Band. How long has it been running?
Well, the Sean Tracy Pipe Band was founded in 1934, but there was a fife and drum band in the parish long before that, and the earliest record of the fife and drum band is 1881. So it was there from 81. At that time, there were loads of land league bands and stuff all over the place, so... But it was called the Burris and Mycarkey National Band 1 year, and the next year it was called the Mycarkey and Burris National Band, because there was a little bit of competition, obviously, about the name. So in 1934, they decided they'd change they'd go away from the fife and drum, and so the Sean Tracy Pipe Band started in 1934.
How many members have you?
We have about 17, 18 at the moment, you know. So it's difficult to get members because it's not an easy instrument to play. Yeah. This man here beside me, Michael Flanagan, says that if playing pipes was easy, everybody would be playing it. So it takes quite a long time and it takes a bit of effort. And, okay, people have... Really, you're looking for, I suppose, for more settled people, because you get in youngsters and they're fine, and then they go to college and stuff and they move away. So, but it's the oldsters, I suppose, that keep it going. But we could certainly do is we're open to a new membership all the time.
And would you play events and things like that?
We play St. Patrick's Day, obviously, and we played an awful lot of matches in Thurles all down the years. I mean, we were kind of the resident band there at Munster finals and league finals and stuff like that.
What was your most memorable thing to play for?
I suppose we played at the 1984 All Ireland Thurles in the GA. That was the year of the centenary of the GA. We played for the minor match there that year, and also we went to in 1985. The following year, we went to New York and we played on Fifth Avenue.
Wow.
And that's 50 years now, 40 years next year. My sums are bad. Those were memorable things.
Well,
but
done.
Yeah, we played lots of occasions. Some happy, some sad, and confirmations different. There were traditions, but a lot of that stuff has finished because insurance and local field days and stuff like that have gone by the wayside. You
it's
know,
a shame, isn't it?
It is really, because they were community. We were in Scotland three times.
Yeah. Were you? You forgot that.
I forgot that.
So it's too good of a time. Well done to you anyway. I'm sure we're going to hear from you again towards the end of the show. And Mike, I'm going to talk to you about the industry. Tell me about your history.
I was 45 years in Killock Quarry. I started in 1962. And the reason Killock Quarry was opened in 1951, for there was a deficiency in lime. The beet crop was very poor because there was a deficiency in lime in the soil.
Yeah.
So that was the reason Killock was opened the first day. It was all the transport was subsidised by the government at that time.
Mm.
So there was 120 people working in Killock.
Wow.
And the old days was also the limestone was also used in the sugar factory for in the lime kilns for purifying the juice, and it graduated up into machinery and more machinery and more.
I look forward to talking to you more about that later on. Lovely to talk to you both. Thanks a million. Making my way back in now into the clubhouse here. I want to talk to Joe Moran from the Men's Shed. The Men's Shed, a big community group here. Tell me, when did it start?
Well, we kind of got a staggered start during the COVID years, and we started in maybe with a lot of former GA players, and our first project was to try to get the old meeting room. We're now in the old meeting room, which has been refurbished, and to get the we got the Tipperary hurler portrait brought back, and then
you
we
were
got
showing me before. It's amazing.
Yeah, the old Sean Keating one, and then we got the club crest done, and people, you know, we have a kind of a symbolic club crest, but a lot of people maybe didn't know what the symbols were about. And we were able to bring that to life with, you know, picking up, we got a picture from a local councillor, Sean Ryan. His dad was, or his granddad, Johnny Ryan, was a famous hurler in the 30s. And that links with the griffins on the crest. And then the boar links with the Leithmore Monastery.
Yeah, because it's a beautiful crest. It's a red and a yellow crest. On one side you have the black boar, then you have the three griffins kind of down the middle. And then you kind of have markings then on the bottom. What is the marking?
The marking, well, the, you know, the cross is linked about the unity and all the basic values that you need in a club of community and linking outside. Yeah. And through the, you know, the Men's Shed in a way has been an umbrella. It has got this room, the old club room, redeveloped. And it also is linked in with so many other organisations in the parish with that you'll be talking about later. Mm. And, of course, I couldn't talk about this without the work done by our brilliant secretary, Bernie Lanigan. And Bernie, you know,
Bernie, and all the work you do here. So what harm? So you're involved in so many groups here, and isn't it typical? With the Men's Shed, there has to be a woman involved, isn't it? They can't do nothing.
Of course, they're not good at the paperwork now, are they? I do a lot of the paperwork for the groups. I apply for funding and, I suppose, make the phone calls and arrange the meetings and all of that.
It's a lot of headaches for you, Bernie, is it?
Not at all. They're an amazing group of people. I'm so lucky to be involved with the Men's Shed here and with the Shulala group in the parish in particular. So those two groups have really made any work I do worthwhile. You know, they're really fantastic. And
tell me about the Shulala. How many people involved in that?
Well, I think Michael Dempsey is going to take over that. Yeah. But there's a huge group. It's hugely successful group in our parish, yeah. And they feed in so well into the work that's been done in the shed here. So last year, for example, we got funding through the E2B Reach funding, and we were fierce lucky to have Jimmy Duggan on board. He took us out to Cabra and up to Killock, like you mentioned a few minutes ago, and a few other local nature biodiversity sites around. And then this year we've had Jimmy back again to do a project around heritage keepers. So we've been really lucky that the Shulala group come in on behind that and support anything that the shed is doing in their projects. Yeah.
Tell me about the community links then as well with the GAA.
Well, we were fortunate that the GAA allowed us to use this room here. So we got funding through the County Council, the Community Recognition Fund, to develop this room. So it's actually not been launched. It hasn't been officially opened yet. So this can be their base now. You know, they can run their classes
and stuff.
That's
a big problem. We've spoken to many sheds groups around the county. Getting a premises is a huge problem for them.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, running costs and keeping a place together, the structure of it. And then in terms of running courses, we're fierce lucky to have North Tip Development Company, Mike Ryan in particular, who has funded a lot of the projects that the lads have been doing here. And it shows then how important what they're doing is. You know, it's hugely important. Yeah.
And well done to you and all your work as well. I'm sure it's really appreciated locally. Thanks, Bernie. And Joe, just to delve into the Men's Shed group then a little bit more, how many members do you have?
Well, we probably have an active group of about, you know, about 7 or 8 very active people, and then we can, when we do broader things, we could muster 20 or 30, you know. But the core group is quite small, and we're very open to new activists, unlike a lot of the Men's Shed groups around the country are very practical orientated, they're into woodwork and that. Now, if they're waiting for me to wake something, I mean, God, she wouldn't want to see it. And some of our group then have drifted into the historical and heritage and local history groups. And we'd like to develop a practical side to it as well, you know, so we could bring people like that in, you know, people that are with a background in trades and so forth, because they can add an awful lot to community welfare and so forth. But look, we're up and running, and as Bernie said, the GA have been very good to us, and, you know, the chairman, Tom Flanagan, and Mary Shelley and all the officers have been very good to us. Lorenz Egan, all these people have helped us hugely. And there's lots of things we can do. There's an area at the back, hopefully we might develop into a kind of an outdoor work area, yard area. And so, please God, it'll move on.
Because you have a fantastic facility here, and I know a lot of people say the GA Field is always kind of at the heart of a community, but no more so here, I think. I mean, with the men's shed involved as well.
All the GA clubs now are making a big effort to get involved in community. You know, there was a new walkway outside there that a lot of the community use now, and that's open, and lights are on it late at night and so forth. That's very important. And, you know, the idea that if you're without community, you have nothing, you know, so the community's everything.
Absolutely. And we might go to Michael Dempsey there now. Sorry, John, did you say?
Liam Clohessy here as well as that. He's under a small bit of pressure. And we can't miss him because I'm fascinated by this. You knew Shane Long, didn't you?
Yeah, we knew him very well since he's a young lad, John.
And, he was playing with St. Kevin's, wasn't he, at the time?
The school by Lake of Our Club is called St. Kevin's. It's 2 miles worth. St. Kevin's is a club.
Yeah.
So St. Kevin's would be the school by Lake of Our Club, so he played for 6 years with us.
And would you have seen it then, that there was huge talent there?
Great talent, yeah. He developed as he grew up, he developed and kept developing.
Yeah, well, there were equally talented players at 14 that didn't quite make it, maybe they didn't want to, maybe whatever it was, but that's what I'm always fascinated by. I mean, there's loads and loads of really skillful. He was obviously skillful, but I bet you had lots of those. But is there a certain X that these fellas can go out and still produce it in front of 50,000 people?
Well, he had the drive, and the main thing was his physique. He had the pace and power. It was very important if you're stepping up grades, you know.
Yeah.
You cannot step up without that, you know.
Yeah.
And like he would have spent, I mean, most soccer players in England just learned soccer and nothing else, basically. He had learned one sport, then like Kevin Moore, he had to relearn another. That must have been very difficult for him.
I find most players that can play are able to play a sport or will able to play most sports.
Yeah.
But not all, they don't all interchange, but depends on the attributes you have, you know. So he had pure pace.
Yes,
it's very important, and power,
And he went to Cork City then, didn't he, after that?
Yeah, he went down.
By the League of Ireland.
Yeah, he played for the Tipperary under 18 league. Minor hurling, but he played with the
soccer.
Tipperary youth soccer, it's called, under 18. They played Cork in a interleague match where he was very outstanding. And I think Pat Dolan was manager of Cork City at the time, and his twin brother, Eamon, was youth manager with Reading at the time. So Shane went down. He obviously saw something in him at that game or whatever, and he went down to Cork. He was only in Cork a few months, and Reading were doing a deal with Cork for...
Would you still have contact with him?
Kevin Doyle, was playing with Cork at that time as well, so the fact that Pat Dolan's twin brother was youth team manager, Shane Long was sort of put in on the deal. They saw something in him, and he went became a professional player with Reading, and he took off from there.
If Pat Dolan's brother hadn't been there still, he could have gone down Tipperary minor hurler, obviously Tipperary senior hurler, all Ireland's with Tipperary, but never be heard of. So much luck and chance in everyone's life.
Yeah, it's all down a lot of the time and who spots you at a certain time, you know, and sees something in you, you know. But obviously, whoever coaches or scouts were there, they saw something in him, and it was proved to be right later on.
That's fantastic. Liam, lovely to talk to you today. Thanks so much for coming down with us. Michael Dempsey, how are you doing? I know we're going to talk to you about different... His history, obviously, is a huge aspect of a lot of the group's work here in Littleton. Tell us what you're involved in.
Well, first of all, we started here with the men's shed about 2 years ago. And the first thing we did there to get the thing going was... there's a new clubhouse here, and we wanted to put up all the pictures of past matches that were won and all that.
Joe was showing to me, it's a real wall of legends up there.
It is, yeah. So from that, then, I just mentioned to Joe that this club here has won something that is very unique, and that was the Jubilee County Final back in 1934. And then that was one of the most successful periods in the history of the club. And then the second successful period was the 1980s. And the 1980s team won the Jubilee, won the Centenary County Final.
Wow.
And that was very unique. So there was never much done about it here, you know.
Yeah.
So we decided here with the men's shed that we'd do something about that. So what we did was we got the old VHS tapes and edited them down to about a quarter of an hour of each match. And Tom Egan at the Huston Jockey Hotel there gave us the theatre up there, you know, which has a very, very big screen. Mm. And we had we went up there and we put on a production up there, and we involved the McCarthy Pipe Band, and we had all the pictures, the films edited down to about a quarter of an hour. So we brought the whole thing back to like if you were there 40 years ago.
Fantastic.
And then we got Liam O'Donoghue. We're very lucky to have Liam O'Donoghue there. Liam, the voice of the Semper Stadium, of course. Liam came on there and he gave the history of the club. He gave Dan Breen came into with the famous Dan Breen Cup. Dan Breen went over to America there. He got disillusioned with what was going on here. And back in about 1927 or that way, he went over to Chicago. Mm. And he started up a business there. There was prohibition over there. But he started up this alcohol business, of course. And he met up with Al Capone. Al Capone heard about him. And he was edging in his territory. But Al Capone came down to him and they met up. But rumour has it that Al Capone backed off. And there's nothing to substantiate that. But it's a great story.
That's a great story.
And as Liam said one time, never let the truth get away
in a good story. Absolutely. Yeah. Pat Lamb then as well. I know you're involved in the Labyrinth project as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we've had the Shuadella group over there at the Rocket Castle there a few times the last couple of years there. Mike there has been fantastic, done fantastic work there with the group, and I promised the group if they could get to the top of the rock, we'd give them the senior discount when they got in. And we've had them back several times since with Jimmy Duggan. They've done a great tour there for Heritage Week there a couple of years ago there, and I've been up there with Derry na Flann as well there with the group there one night as well there.
Yeah.
And I suppose we all know the magnificent history of Derry na Flann. I suppose just briefly there if you want me to go through it there, I suppose.
Well, the thing about it is the Littleton Labyrinth, the whole thing, I mean, that's going to, you know about, that's going to be really transformative, because I suppose I'd be wearing a hat of Tip Tourism as well. Yeah. I think that's going to be huge. You know, is there huge confidence around here, the local people, that this is really going to make a difference?
Oh, there is, John, yes, certainly. Like, it's bringing access to Derry na Flann for a whole new generation there. With the horse and jockey there so close by, the amount of people we're getting from the jockey there, you know, you get coming up from the hotel there, we had nearly 360,000 people in the Rock last year.
Yes.
If you can tap into a percentage of that, you know, even 1% of that is nearly 3,600 people. If you can even get that up there, that'd be fantastic. But it's unique, it'll be different from what your Greenway or going through the bog. What's it going to Peatway or whatever brand name we'll put on it there. And very much a different experience from the Greenway that you'll get down in Waterford, so to speak.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely, I think, fascinating there. There's no doubt about it. And I think people are coming out there. The first time I went in there, and Jimmy and Liam will know this, you had to climb over wire, get through bushes, everything else. It was nearly impossible to find it. People just go in and get lost. Now it's been opened up. I think it's such a great backstory. It has everything to the way tourism is going into the outdoors. I think I have huge confidence that it will be a great success at relatively low cost.
And what's the time on that then? When can we expect that to be completely open?
Now, they started the new section of the project there in the end of September there of last year. And I think John probably knows we're hoping to have this section finished there by April.
May, because it was delayed a little bit. And then, of course, it's to go link all the way up to Temple Tuohy. And, of course, the wonderful thing about it is you have, you know, normally the problem is access getting through private land, but you have one owner the whole way to Temple Tuohy. They're on site, they're doing the project as well as that. So it can link up Tipperary. And then, of course, I told you the backstory as well, how the chalice was found.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be wonderful. Of course, a bugbear of mine as well as that, we could even in the summer get the chalice down here into Tipperary. put the two together and why you have your some product.
Yeah, to be amazing. Pat, lovely to talk to you today. Thanks a million for that. Frank, how are you?
Not too bad at all.
Now, tell us about the link with the Children of Lear.
The Children of Lear, the legend of the Children of Lear is very much linked to Leetmore and St. Macavo, who formed a monastery in early Christianity in Leetmore. And during the time of swans, the Children of Lear sang hauntingly beautiful songs that captivated all who heard them. However, their true identity remained hidden until St. Macavo came upon them. He recognized that these beautiful, graceful swans were in fact the exiled Children of Lear. He instructed them in Christianity, blessed them, and changed them back into human form again. And the link is really with Leetmore, in that over 100 swans come there every year. It's really
an incredible sight.
It brings
sight.
The whole thing to reality.
Yeah.
We had a dawn mass in Leetmore on Easter Sunday morning, and you could see the swans down the fields very close to it.
Oh, beautiful. Mm. That's incredible. Thank you for telling us about it today. Thanks a million. Mary, I'm coming to you. Mary, I know you're involved in the community historical group here locally. Tell us about what the work that you do here and what you're involved in.
We were very surprised, in March, we discovered an ancient road. We were doing a history project with the help of an archaeologist. And we got the consent of the landowners, and we actually approached this road. It stretches north from the Harden Quarry to Ballymarine Castle.
Wow! And what were you expecting to uncover?
We didn't expect it at all. It was an amazing find.
Yeah.
And out on a dig, like, I believe Joanne Hughes was out with you. It's a friend of mine.
Joanne Hughes,
out on a kind of a dig. It's a real cutting edge. You're finding something new. And I see you, if you're Joanne, you were probably out with your toothbrushes, were you?
Well, no. She actually arrived one day, and she was so enthusiastic. We didn't realise there was anything to be found in the area. Mm-hmm. And you should see, we just approached it from the Thurles Road aside, and the next thing she discovered an ancient house which is well over a century old.
Wow.
with a roof with the slate small on the top, and she began pointing out features like that.
Yeah.
And then in the yard of that farmhouse we discovered a cast iron pump. None of us would actually notice this thing, but she said the handle was a cow's tail.
Wow.
Handle. And we went on a bit further, and she pointed out this round pier, which was ivy clad, which would mean nothing to us, and she suggested to us that it might have been the entrance to an ancient house or settlement. And then the following week, then we went out and we approached it from the Ballymarine side.
Yeah.
And we got again the permission of the landowners, and we went in and we discovered this lane, which is actually the boundary between two farmlands. And we explored it along, and we the actual ditch there is actually intact in places. Now, there's a lot of vegetation that has collapsed in and so on around it. But anyway, we think the actual Ballymarine Castle was built with the limestone from Laharden Castle.
Yeah.
And
that's incredible.
Yeah. And then we came along the roadway, and we realised that the laneway out to the road, which is intact on both sides, we refer to it as Delaney's Lane.
Yeah.
That came out across the actual road, crossed the old innate roadway, just below Ballymarine Graveyard, which again is a very important site in our parish. And we actually discovered that you can actually see the actual portion of the actual ditch in the farm across from Ballymarine Graveyard.
Yeah. Wow.
Which we never noticed before.
That's incredible. And tell us about the group then as well, the local history group. How long have you been going here?
Well, we started this project in early March with Joanne, but we did a previous project that you probably heard about, which was the Michael Cawdy incident in Littleton, where he was shot in 1923. And then we got a little bit of training from the heritage keepers so that we could carry on with our history project.
And well done, and I'm sure you're going to find a lot more treasures as it goes on.
We've found so many things, really. We know that there's four ring forts, and say three of them, well, two of them are actually on the side of the roadway.
Yeah.
There's one on the east side and one on the west side. There's a lime kiln which is there. We have done some exploration on it, but there's so many things to find.
Gosh.
But we must thank Joanne, really, because she suggested to us that we should actually base our study on the Rahinch area, which is in the ancient parish of Ballymarine,
yeah,
the civil parish of Ballymarine. And we thought there's nothing to find there, like, and we have found
how wrong
so
you were.
Much.
Yeah,
really. And the amazing thing is that we're so enthusiastic about it. We're hoping that we'll be able to continue and get funding to do more research into it, because as I said, there's massive. We decided we were going to do it on the whole parish.
Yeah.
But like there's so much too much in the Rahinch area.
Mary, lovely to talk to you, and wish the group continued success and continued discoveries. Thanks so much. We have to take a quick break here from Littleton. We'll be right back.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage Pecan, you can't beat experience. With over 50 years maintaining Peugeot cars and vans, we like to call ourselves the experts. Call Slattery's Garage for a free vehicle health check today. 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.
The Tipperary Village Tour. Funded by Commissioner Naman with the television licence fee.
And we're live here in Littleton this morning at Moycarkey Burris as part of the Men's Shed group as well. Jimmy Duggan, lovely to see you again. I haven't seen you since Cabra.
Yeah, Cabra is still there anyway, still growing, still the biodiverse place.
Great to see you again.
That it is, yeah.
Absolutely. And what's very rich here, of course, as we're hearing a lot this morning, is the history here in Littleton. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yes, for as somebody said, they would pass through and just keep their eye on the speedometer. But it's that typical estate village. That opened up once the main Dublin-Cork road in the late 1740s was built. Before that, there's not any real, it's all dispersed settlement here in Littleton, perhaps around Ballybeg Castle. There's no sunken way or burrow attached to Moycarkey Castle, which is a very fine structure, but that was also dispersed Norman settlement. So it was the opening of the main road and the arrival of a man with a vision, I suppose, Parson Thomas O'Grady, who lived in the rectory, and he set out to found a village on an axis between the main road and his beautiful new church and the rectory, which was about half a mile away.
Mm.
So he laid walks, he deepened the bed of the river, he built the beautiful church, and then the big house of the area was initially Russell's and then Powers of Ballydavid, and they had all then the accoutrements of a big house around the village, like tennis courts, vegetable gardens, the big house itself, the avenues, the back avenue, the servants, and all that. And that made up, and then a main street for commerce. It was a lovely, beautiful, tree-lined street.
Can I ask you then about the name of the place, right? You know, you were the principal here in the school, so Ballybeg or Ballynagha, the two of those come up. You see Ballybeg, the little village, but the old name is Ballynagha, isn't it?
Ballynagha, Ballydavid.
So Shinny Ballydavid, that's it.
Ballydavid House, yeah. And Ballybeg then was anglicised, if you like, to Littleton.
The
little town as such. Mm, yeah. But the town's land where the castle was is Ballybeg, and then on the other side, quite a large town's land is Ballygach or Ballydavid.
I'm fascinated by one story. I have to get this through. All the other IRA fellas, when they attacked, they went at night, they got about 30 men, and they attacked the barracks, and there was a big shootout for a long time, mostly unsuccessful. The cute boys down here got in the front door. Tell us about that.
Well, if Mycarthy has a lot of things going for it, great hurlers and great workers and on the bog and a considerable amount of charm.
Yeah, yes.
And at the end of the day, it was the charm that won out. In
they charmed their way into the black. They charmed the black and tans.
Yes, yeah, yeah, they charmed their way into the barracks as such. And yeah, of course, Gerry Ryan was a very much to the fore in the whole Republican in the whole Republican movement and the War of Independence, and was very much a driver of that whole all the campaign in this area, both in Thurles and in Mycarthy.
Of course, very down in Ballymoreen with Dick Mulcahy, and they were boyhood chums, weren't they, here as well, as that is fascinating.
Yeah, it's you know, as somebody has said, there are so many jewels to be unearthed around.
And you're great at unearthing them, Jimmy. Well, you're fantastic.
We'd have to give 2 hours. Jimmy, lovely to talk to you. Thanks so much. Now, to talk about local industry, because that, of course, played a big role, not just in the history of Littleton, but also, I think, in the present day. Jim, how are you doing?
Hi, Alison.
Tell me, how long did you work in Bournemouth for?
Well, I had 41 years in Bournemouth. And yeah, there were good years. It was a tough job to work in from time to time. But I was lucky enough, I got to be a supervisor. And I suppose sometimes they tell you how the easiest part of it, but maybe it wasn't, maybe it wasn't, maybe, you know. But,
yeah, and tell me about, you found some interesting things over your time there, didn't you?
I did. Back in the 80s, Bournemouth never brought out this poster, and they had, in conjunction with the museums in Dublin, and they had diagrams of different things that you might find in the bog down to the years. But there was traps and different types of shoes and different things. So we kind of knew what we were looking at because we were seeing this poster every day. It was in the office, like.
Yeah.
But next thing, one day in the summer of 84, I was walking up the bog and I saw this thing on the top of the mound. So I said to myself, this is something I've seen before. So I recognised it from the poster that had been put up. So I brought it in anyway, and I wrapped it in plastic and put bog around it to preserve it so that it wouldn't dry out in transportation. So I brought it into the office anyway, and I said to the lads inside in the office, I said, bring up the museum there and see if they may be interested in it. So, fair enough, they were interested in it, and a person by the name of Mary Cahill, she sent down all the necessary information on what it was, and she was absolutely delighted to get the shoe. So the shoe, it was found in near enough to what Mary described as one of the oldest Christian settlements in the country, which was up in... as you go from Littleton to Glengall, in Derren Villa, there was a church in there, regarded as one of the oldest Christian settlements in the country. So it was probably belonged to a monk or somebody of that nature.
And it's now on display in a museum in Dublin?
It's in the, well, they don't put everything on display because they have so many artefacts up there that they can't put everything on display. Yeah. But it's there. If you want to see it, you look up a certain number and they'll find it. Yeah.
That's great. You must be a bit proud of that, are you?
Well, it is nice to have done something, you know what I mean, to have found a shoe, like. But it all stems back to the fact that the poster was put up. And once they saw it, they recognised it. But loads of people that dig bog every year, digging out turf and doing stuff like that, they come on things, and some of them are recognised and picked up, and others are just covered over. Like, but for good luck, I recognised what we had on the ground. So.
Well, well done.
Yeah, so Mary was delighted with it.
Excellent, well done. And from old industry to new industry, and Caroline Egan is here as well from Horse and Jockey. Caroline, how are you?
Hi, Alison. Good.
Tell me about Horse and Jockey, of course. It's a great industry there as well, going from strength to strength, of course, all the time.
Yeah, no, it's a great place. I suppose it's always been really the kind of, the community has always played a huge part in, the hotel, and there's always, there's so much always going on there, between we have a choir running there and we have a singing circle at the end of every month. And, it's just always been a unique place, probably because of the community and because of, you know, the village-like kind of atmosphere within the hotel. So, you know, it's kind of, when people talk about the place, the one thing they always talk about is the atmosphere, do you know, and the people. So, you know, it kind of makes the place. So, yeah.
And of course, you can't overlook as well a big source of local employment as well for people.
Yeah, over the years, I have Connie O'Keefe sitting here beside me. She's a stalwart of the place. And, you know, over the years, there's been so many local people working there, do you know. And we recently won the Best Four-Star Hotel in Ireland Award, which was, you know, an amazing achievement for all of those people, you know, who have worked there since, you know, we bought the place back in the 80s and even before then, you know, and it's kind of grown and grown over the years, but I suppose it's always kept its kind of local, kind of Tipperary kind of atmosphere.
But it's hopping every day you go in there, like, it's great to see.
Yeah, no, it is a busy, busy place.
Yeah. There's one rule for really getting what she has, the top four-star hotel in Ireland, and what's about, what's the one thing you would say as a manager to make a hotel really work?
Look after your staff, I think, is one of the most important things anyway, do you know? And make something unique, you know?
Because I see the same staff serve me when I come in there for the last 10 years, so that must say something.
Yeah, you know, we are, you know, I know many places say it, but we are a big family there, do you know? And we all look after each other. And, you know, if you can do that and try not to follow other hotels and make, you know, do it your own way, I think it kind of, you know, works. And, you know, we've got so many different things under the one roof now, like hairdressers, bakery. You know, people come down from Dublin or wherever and they, you know, sit on the couch and soak up the place, and, you know, it's great. So.
Well done, and we wish you every success.
Thank you very much.
In the future. Thanks so much, Caroline. Liam, well done. Lovely to talk to you again. The last time I was speaking to you was Semple Stadium, of course. You had a big role there for a long time. Tell us what that was.
Well, I suppose my family moved into Thurles in the early 60s, and I suppose since I was stone mad about hurling and hurling matches and hurlers and mating them and all that. And sure, since then, over 60 years ago, I've seen every decent match, I suppose, that was played in the stadium. For the last 40 years, I've been working the PA there, I've been PRO for the stadium. So I was in a prime position to see the game I loved from the best seat in the stand.
That's incredible.
And saw all those, since the 60s, I suppose, I've seen anything that was worthwhile there. I had the great privilege in the 60s of seeing, say, the likes of Tony Wall and Jimmy Doyle and all the great Tipperary hurlers of that era. And the bit of hurling I played myself was in the backs. And I loved watching backmen hurling. Yeah. I loved watching Pat Hartigan and Sean Foley, those great Limerick hurlers, Shawnee McMahon, the Hendersons, Kilkenny and all of that, you know. But
were you there when it was the sports field?
Well, I remember there, I wasn't the PA announcer at that time. That came in about 1970 or 71. But then the great forwards that it was great to see, say, the likes of DJ Carey coming from a young lad hurling with in colleges with the St. Kieran's right up to the his mastery of the game, and to see, say, the great goals that were scored, Fenton's goal, I suppose, and Nicky English's Maradona goal, and all of those, you know, the great goal scored by Paul Flynn with Waterford. There were such marvellous things to be seen. They're real treasures, you know. It was like a sweet shop. I was in the sweet shop. Everything I loved was there in front of me and glowing in front of me, the best that I could see.
Myself and Liam, we have an illness in common, actually. We can't stop writing. That's the problem. Except this fella keeps winning national awards all the time. But he has a book out on Semple Stadium, and that was up in the bestseller list. I saw. So I'm very jealous. He was up in the bestseller list as well as that. And he's another one coming out. Will you tell us about it, Liam?
No, well, that book really did very well, this Field of Legends. It kept me alive during COVID, because I hate twiddling my thumbs doing nothing at home. So O'Brien Press got onto me. They were doing some books on various arenas around, and it was great to get the opportunity to do that. I love doing it, because I suppose I was in the right place to do
you
it.
You witnessed a lot of it.
I saw most of it, and I heard all the stories of what had gone on before, and I was trying to relate that atmosphere and hand it on. But John says, the project I'm working on at the moment, I'm only starting into it, is the story of the Hearty Cup in Thurles, and that's the Senior A College's prestige.
We've had a good few years in the Hearty Cup, haven't
we? Indeed. So that's going well over 100 years back to the time of since Archbishop Hearty presented it in 1917. So, and Indeed, the Rockwell College were the first to win it in 1918, which would be unusual, and right up to Nina, CBS at the minute. It was a great story, it's a long story, so I've a hell of a lot of work ahead of me, you know.
And when can we expect that then?
Well, I can't. Well, I'd say you'd be coming back. I don't know. I hope I see the end. You know, it's a mountain I have to climb, but I don't mind that. Yeah.
Oh well, we wish you all the best. I'm sure we'll be talking to you again ahead of that.
Thank you.
That brings to a close then our morning in Mycarthy. Thanks to everyone for taking part. And as always, I could have given another hour here, but we're going to close out with another tune from the Sean Tracy Pipe Band. That's it from here from Mycarthy Burst near the Men's Shed. And from Littleton, back to you in studio.
Ah, what a great piece. Ali, thanks very much indeed for that. So many memories coming back to me when I hear the Pipe Band there. And I'm thinking of all the wonderful Cooney family who were so much part of that wonderful band over the years. As you know, my dad was from around that area. So I have a great fondness for Littleton, Mycarthy and Ballybeg and all of that. 1800 938 007. Don't forget, if you have a gardening query, will you log it with us, please? 083 311 3311.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry,
in association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie. Hi, dear.